right, guys, welcome back to Shakedown Shan. Hope you all had a great 2 weeks because we weren't here last week. I did a lot of great things last week that kept me busy. Got a puppy, got little Rothbard, and I also went camping with the Cub Scouts, and that was interesting. That was a great adventure. They got to meet the Boy Scouts because the Boy Scouts were also camping there. And so they went over and they got to ask a few questions from the Boy Scouts, like what they do differently than the Cub Scouts. And one of the major differences is that when they go camping, the Boy Scouts have to cook all of their own food. The parents don't do it for them. The leaders don't do it for them. And they're not allowed to cook simple food like hamburgers and hot dogs. When we showed up, they just got done eating chicken cordon bleu, and they were eating peach cobbler.
Oh, my. The Boy Scouts?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that was interesting. And a lot of them also like to sleep in hammocks rather than tents. They sleep in hammocks. They said it's more comfortable because they don't touch the ground. Their back's not on the ground.
They're getting a little cushy, aren't they?
I mean, I guess it's good to know how to cook something really packed full of flavor while you're camping so you don't get bored of it. I know we had, the leaders and the parents made it. We had wrapped ham up in foil with pineapple, and it was glazed with brown sugar and stuff that we cooked on the fire. And we had huge baked potatoes, and that was my part because I don't eat the ham. But we had huge baked potatoes, and they were really, really good. I filled it with sour cream and cheese. It was good.
Yeah, neat.
It was neat. And then we had mountain pies. I had my first mountain pie.
What's that?
It's two slices of bread that you toast on the fire, and you put pie filling in it, like either apple or cherry or whatever. And it was really, really good. It was like a little mini pie.
That's neat.
It was.
Now, did you say they sleep in hammocks, or?
The Boy Scouts tend to. Some of them do bring tents. It's just whatever they prefer. We all brought tents.
Do they make their own hammocks, or is it like set up?
I think they buy it.
They buy them and set them up. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But it looks interesting what the Boy Scouts do. They were practicing for a kayak race that they had coming up, so they were all at the beach kayaking and some were tipping over. It's funny. It was a good time though. The puppy's been really, really good. He's super cute.
Yeah.
Super cute. Very energetic.
Oh.
For a long it's ours like a little child.
Ours is 9 months old and it's still energetic. They're energetic for quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a long few years.
Yes.
But he's cute. I love him. And let's see, what else did I do? I took my first airplane ride in a little private airplane, and it was really cool. I got to see mountains and stuff, got to see some of the high peaks of the Adirondacks. And I think there was something else that I did, and I can't remember.
But it's a lot of things you see that you wouldn't.
No.
Flying. It's kind of interesting. It's really pretty being up there and looking down and seeing how it looks like from the air.
Yeah, and the whole time you think, what am I going to do if we crash?
I know. Jeez.
I'm afraid of heights, but it was all right. I wasn't scared. Only one time when we hit an air pocket, you hit an air pocket and you sink down into it real quick. It was like being on the Sasquatch for a second.
Yeah.
You just drop. And I thought we were going down, but we weren't.
I
like held on to the bottom of my seat because that's going to help me if we fall, right? So anyway, there's been a lot of stuff coming out this week, which I didn't plan to really get into today. I wanted to talk about the war on drugs and all the hypocrisies of it and all that good jazz. But I did want to recap just a little bit about what's been blowing up on social media about current events and everything. Of course, immigration thing has been everywhere. There's just so much wrong facts everywhere on both sides. There's just insane amount of outrage that is just now coming to the surface. Because Trump is put under a microscope, and Obama wasn't really. He wasn't put under a microscope as much because he kind of fit the part of a president where he seemed to be qualified. He spoke well and eloquently. He was very, very sneaky, though. He did a lot of things behind closed doors without telling us. He started wars illegally. Like we said before, he ran out of bombs. Like, I mean, any president has a lot of bad things associated with them. And people are just now starting to put the presidential figurehead under a microscope. And I mean, that is a good thing. But in the same sense, I think it should happen with everybody. We should put everybody under a microscope. And so this immigration problem isn't just a Trump problem. Right. We need to take the politics out of it and look at the issue itself.
Yeah. One of the things I found not funny, but kind of sad this week was they were showing children in cages sleeping on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to Snopes, the fact check site, and actually those were children that President Obama, not himself,
but the administration,
under his presidency, had put in cages because they came across the border without adults, like some of them are now. And so he had them put into camps with, and those, but they attributed it to Trump putting them in cages. But a lot of what happens too, see, that's why this has to stop. I mean, we have to really get a hold on our borders, because a lot of children come in with adults and they're not their family, they're child traffickers. And there's no, I mean, we don't even know how to check that. How do you check it out, right?
Right.
So it's like there's so much in the background other than just people walking over the borders illegally. You know, and, you know, they carry drugs and I don't know. And then they sell the children once they get here. And it's like, I don't know, there's too much negativity goes along with illegal alien crossings.
I agree that immigration causes a lot of problems. And I've said definitely before that I think the answer to stopping all these negative issues with immigration is getting rid of social programs, because that's the main incentive for them to come over here anyway. So if you get rid of that, I mean, why would you come here? We're not as You're great right. as everyone thinks. Honestly, we're a lot better than most places. We definitely have it good, but either way, you're not really coming to the land of the free if you really get into like what we've been talking about here on this show, why we're not that free. But to other countries, we do have the most amount of freedom, and so it's understandable. But either way, the social programs, getting rid of those, will definitely help stop the negative side of immigration. There are a lot of positive sides of immigration as far as work and labor forces and stuff, and just kids being able to get into a better situation where they're not around so much drugs in their countries. But so the way I take like borders is, and I'm still feeling this out, trying to work it out in my head, because I haven't given it too much thought. But I mean, I have given it a lot of thought, but I don't have it in enough. I don't have enough thought put into it to get it out in words yet. So it'll be something coming to you guys soon. But I'm more of like an open borders kind of person, where I feel like I think the earth is where we live, and everybody should. These are just imaginary lines, and we should be able to go freely. And I mean, if you're violent and abuse that freedom, that's when it gets taken away from you. And so I know that doesn't work, right? It's not, open borders wouldn't work, because we have A, like I said, all these social programs put in place. And B, there's too much red tape to work around right now. It'd be a long time coming before we ever had open borders. But that's kind of my stance on it, because A, I don't feel like the federal government should be able to say who can and cannot come onto land that they don't actually own, because, like we've said, the government doesn't have any money. It all comes from us. So they didn't ever buy this land with their own money. and we pay for it in our taxes. So it should be up to individuals who they allow on their own property. Like, if you don't want someone coming on your property, you're more than welcome to say they can't come on there because you pay for that. So, I mean, as far as public property goes, I feel like the federal government doesn't have any say in that because they don't actually pay for it. We pay for it.
Yeah, we do. And I kind of, you know, I agree with you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if we have open borders, I mean, that could lead to...
I know. It's such a sticky situation. Anarchy.
I mean, I look at France, who had open borders. And now they can't control their country because they had a huge influx of Muslims. And they're lawless. I mean, they're doing things that are against the French laws. Mm-hmm. And the French are absolutely powerless to stop them because there's so many of them. And I mean, they're becoming the number, they're starting to outnumber French citizens. And can you imagine? I mean, their country will maybe in another 20 years be taken over, where French won't even be in the major population of France. And in a way, that's kind of scary because it could become a terrorist state. And I'm not saying that because they're Muslim. Don't get me wrong.
But you see all the violent people going there.
Right. Yeah. And I can see them having bases there, not mm-hmm. maybe the whole population. But I think my feeling is that you have to go through quite a bit today to become a citizen. And you may be able to fast track that, but you want to have people documented that come in here so that you can check on their background to see if they have been mm-hmm. violent, where they're coming from. And that while they're here getting citizenship, that you can, they're documented on where they are. So, I mean, if you do have a felon or a group like MS-13 people coming in, you'll be able to, at least you know that they're documented. And then you can fast track the way to citizenship. I mean, instead of taking 7 years, maybe take it 3 years, because they have to learn a little bit about our culture and our history, you know, to live here.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you don't want to do is to, let's say, have like it was in the older days, like when my grandparents came over, they were from Italy and they settled into an Italian section of town. So you had an Italian section and a Polish section.
The Irish section,
which didn't create, it didn't foster a sense of
togetherness.
Yeah. And that's when they started the crime gangs and you don't want to have that. You know, once you're an American, you want to have everybody
on the same page. You want to assimilate and mix cultures. And
have your own culture, but understand, you know, where you're coming to.
Yeah.
So I think we need an overhaul on our immigration policies. I do. Mm-hmm. But I believe we can make it easier for people to become citizens.
I definitely want to make it easier for citizenship. And I do want to explore how an open border would work logistically. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, just like how I feel about like my own personal belief of like earth and living and stuff like that and like peaceful living. And so I've got a lot of research to do on it. And I know it's super, super, super hard to even think about having an open border with everything going on, especially like you said, over in France. But I mean, obviously, it's kind of like a utopian look, mm-hmm. and it's probably never going to happen, but that's how I would like it to be.
Sure.
But I would have to look into the logistics and find like the best way to get the closest to that. And I think a really good step would be making citizenship easier, quicker. Background checks, I do feel, are necessary. Definitely, like you said, you don't want violent people coming in and stuff like that. And that's that could create a huge problem, too, if you just freely let people in. So, I mean, there's a lot to look into it. It's a huge topic. There's so many rabbit holes. And that's why it's just I don't think anyone can get it right.
Yep.
Nobody can get it right.
Have you ever been out to the swearing in on the 4th of July of people that have come here that are taking the oath to citizenship?
No.
It's moving. It's a moving ceremony. It's out at the battlefield. And there can be anywhere from 10 people being sworn in to 50. And they're all crying. I mean, you know, it's such a, you know, I mean, when you ask an immigrant, say, who was our first president that's becoming a citizen, and they say Abraham Lincoln, well, that's kind of like, well, okay, you got to go back and kind of learn who the first president was, a little bit about our history, but they really appreciate what they're doing, taking that oath of office. And yeah, they had to learn a little bit about history and about the states and stuff, but they're so proud. I mean, they're actually crying when they're being sworn in, and that, what a sight that is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but shortening up the term.
Yeah, definitely.
That's one way to start.
As far as putting people in cages for crossing the border, though, I think you and everyone else know how I feel about that, mm-hmm. that nonviolent people should not be thrown in cages.
Right.
And I don't think crossing an imaginary line should put you in a cage, especially if you weren't violent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you cross that line and you did it violently, or you come over here and start to be violent, then you deserve to be in a cage. But I do not believe that crossing a fake line should put you behind bars.
But see, what they don't tell you is that the children that are put in to, we call them cages, and that's really not what they are. I mean, we talked before the show about the two kids in
the
cage.
Well, even just like people, just like
but
adults.
But like a detention. Well, the adults, though, are, what they have to do with the adults, there's certain people that are put in for asylum. So they have to check out and make sure they're just not crossing the border and saying that they're here for asylum. People that have been thrown out of the country for a crime and that have come back in have to be held so that they can go to trial, because the first time it's a misdemeanor. If you're put out of the country because you created a crime and you come back, it's a felony. So then you have to go before a court. So you have to be held somewhere. Now, kids can only be held for 20 days. And then they're put into the foster homes while their parents are being processed. So they're not in cages until, if it takes a year for their parents to be going through the system. So, I mean, they are being taken care of by families. It's not that they're in these cells, we'll call them cells, I mean, you know, for a year, because the law says they can't be in more than 20 days. But they have to, that's what happens when you can't be documented. They have to find out, were you brought here by someone that's going to traffic you in the sex side of it, or slave trade? I mean, you just can't let everybody go. You've got to document people.
But what I'm saying is, I don't feel like people should be arrested and put into jail for and like be considered a criminal for immigrating here, because it's not violent and it's not right to put them
no,
in jail
I understand,
for it.
I understand.
And just because the law says it's illegal to come here without being documented doesn't mean that it should be. Doesn't mean that that's right. I mean, at one time, slavery was legal, and it shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
It just because the law says something doesn't mean that it's right. And so I feel like definitely we need to have checks. We need to do background checks and stuff like that, find out that these kids are safe with these adults bringing them and everything like that. But I don't feel like it should be a law that you're a criminal if you come over here.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. I mean, look, there's 13 or 14 million illegal immigrants here in the country that,
and
probably 11 of them,
considering the law, they're all criminals.
Right.
Yeah.
But considering 11 million of them are collecting benefits and insurance and that, and the other 3 or 4 are undocumented because they don't want to be caught and sent back. You got like 11 million people on assistance that we're paying
yeah,
for,
and that's not right
and
either.
That's why I say I think there should be a track to citizenship, and don't make it difficult or you know, or make demands on people. But you do have to ferret out the criminals, and because I remember years ago when Cuba, we wanted the Cubans to come here. I mean, you know, families were down in Florida were saying, "Oh, my family's in prison." Well, what Castro did, being the smart person he was, he let all his prisoners out of jail, and all his mentally handicapped people, and put them on boats and sent them over.
Right.
And that's what we got, were felons, murderers, and you know, I mean, thank the handicapped for coming over here because we could help them out. But you don't want a jail being open and getting the hardcore child molesters, multi-kill, you know, people that killed multiple times.
No, definitely
not. You want
not.
An easy way to make and ferret them out. Don't take years. You know, you could probably do that in 4 or 5 months, I'm sure. And then get them on a track. And like I said, instead of 7, maybe make it 2 or 3.
Right. Yeah. So it definitely should be easier. And I do think the law should change that you're not a criminal for coming over here. Mm-hmm. But it's huge. There's so much that goes into it that has to be looked at and redone and revisited. And I think people, instead of just playing the blame game with politics and, oh, Trump did this, and we've been seeing Bill Clinton thrown out here with what he did. And yeah, there's a lot of facts. There's a lot of misfacts. There's a lot of blame game and name calling and whatever. But that's not the real issue. It's the policies. It's the laws. Everything needs to be revisited, relooked at, rewritten. Redone, and people should be advocating for that, outraged over the laws.
Well, exactly. And the fact, too, is that people just talk about something they don't even know about.
Right.
Just because they hear it.
Just because they
hear it. They may hear it on the news, and they don't like Trump to begin with, which is okay.
Yeah.
Not everybody has to like a president.
Right.
But I was reading an article today in the paper before I came over, and it was... someone had said, I forgot the syndicated writer that said, you know, not everybody liked President Obama, but when he did things, it wasn't yelled by the citizens as much as it is today.
And it should have been.
And it should have been. But I mean, even the news stayed away from it.
Right.
You know,
they
I mean,
did. Because most of the news is left.
That's right.
Leftist.
That's right.
They cater to. Democrats and leftists.
And left-leaning situations.
Yes.
I mean, and there were two CNN former correspondents on one of the talk shows, and they left CNN, and they said, if you don't believe that they are really left-leaning and they're getting worse, he said, then you're fooling yourself, because that's why we left. We don't mind being left of center, but we can't. They're going way, way too much.
They are. They bang their war drums. As soon as a war started, they've got so much to talk about.
Yep.
Keeps them in business. And what did Obama do? He kept just getting into wars and kept the regime change going. And I mean, Trump did the same thing with Syria, like he said he wasn't going to do. And I mean, that's probably like one of the best things that the left has to say about him.
Mm-hmm.
Is all he bombed them over there because they were doing bad things to the people. That's like, they're like, it's the only good thing he did. No, that's a bad thing.
That's right.
A bad thing. This is
not good.
This is our problem here. So that was one thing that came up. Another thing that came up was this ridiculous idea of a space force. You know me. You know I like Star Wars. I don't like it that much to live in it. And if this does happen and we get an empire and we get a Sith and Sith lords and all this good stuff, or bad stuff, I should say, you'll find me on the rebellion team.
Where you'll find me. You'll be dressed in one of those, like, have a bun on each side of your
head. I'll put my space buns on And yeah, get going. I'll learn some lightsaber fighting. It'll be good. The Force will be with me.
All right. Way to go.
But yeah, so I have no idea what's going on with anybody's heads in Washington that is advocating for this. I don't know how it came about. I haven't looked into it whatsoever. I saw a few headlines, and that's all it took for me to just facepalm myself and just be done with the internet for the day. So I wrote a really silly status the other day about how I was like, oh, I just saw that Trump wants to do something with the Space Force. It's going to be the sixth branch of the military or something. I was like, I don't know about you guys, but it sounds an awful lot like the Sith from Star Wars.
Right.
And I had people like strongly advocating for this on there. They're like, this is a good thing. We need to defend our freedoms in space. And all I could think about was, okay, well, defense, if you think about a soccer game, mm-hmm. defense means you're back on your home side of the field defending your goal.
Mm-hmm.
You're not playing offense on the other team's side of the field. Defending your, quote, liberties and freedoms that are infringed on us anyway, should be done at home on our soil. If so, not, it shouldn't be proactively going somewhere just in case X, Y, or Z might happen, because then that sets people off to do X, Y, or Z. Let's stay home.
Yeah.
Let's take care of our own people. Let's defend our own goal and stop putting ourselves in places we don't belong.
The only thing I can think of, and I don't know, you may be too young to remember this, but when President Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev were talking about, getting the Berlin Wall torn down, one of the things Reagan had said was that we had a Star Wars project.
Yeah.
And that if they launched a missile from space, we could, you know, shoot it down. With all, I don't know, laser or whatever to explode it in the air. So Russia backed down and they decided that, you know, that's when they got rid of communism. And when President Reagan said, yeah, really? Well, now, then Gorbachev left and then started again. But when he said, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, please tear down this wall. And they did. And they were afraid of the Star Wars thing. Well,
which may have just been talk.
It was talk. It never was there. Okay. So the idea that we had something up there that could do that frightened Russia enough to say, well, you know what, maybe we shouldn't push it. And, you know, it is time to get the wall down and you know, what could be. And I think Gorbachev was very a smart man, too. I mean, he wanted to kind of break communism down. But I'm just wondering if this is something like that, but because people hate Trump so much, they're like getting too much into it. Where with Reagan, the news didn't get into it at all. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like blowing up in Trump's face because, you know, he's trying to promote something that, well, look, I mean, all these countries have nuclear bombs now and we're not going to stand for it. So we're creating a program defense. And I'm just wondering if it's talk, but they're not letting him.
It might be.
But the news is making it seem like he's crazy and is going to start something up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
We'll find out.
But if it is anything of substance, I mean, we're already so much in debt that I want to bang my head on the table because that would be a ridiculous amount of spending to
You'll
do.
You'll be wearing a football helmet during
and
the shows.
I don't really want to give our military and the federal government the power to start doing stuff in space. Like I said, Star Wars, we saw the Death Star. They could just blow up planets with a button. And we're blowing up this one. And now this one. I'm not ready for that. I didn't think I would ever see anything like that. And maybe I will, maybe I won't. But I hope I don't.
Right.
Hope I don't. So yeah, that was something ridiculous that I saw this week, and I can't believe people are defending it. It's crazy that people are like, "That's just a good idea. It's a great idea." No, war is not good.
Put an idea out there, and somebody will defend it.
Right.
Anything, you know.
So, I did want to talk about the war on drugs today. And so first, I just want to go over a little history. I have like a quick overview, nothing too in depth, but it does go through quite a few years. It starts with 1914. All right, so I'm just going to read this to you guys. At the turn of the 20th century, the drug market went mostly unregulated. Medical remedies, which often contained cocaine or heroin derivatives, were freely distributed without prescription and without much consumer awareness of which drugs were potent and which were not. Attitude towards medical tonics could have meant the difference between life and death. So in 1914, the Supreme Court ruled in 1886 that the state governments could not regulate interstate commerce, and the federal government, whose skimpy law enforcement focused mainly on counterfeiting and other crimes against the state, initially did very little to pick up the slack. This changed during the years of the 20th century as the invention of automobiles made interstate crime and investigation of interstate crime more practical. So in 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Act targeted toxic drugs and was expanded to addressing misleading drug labels in 1912, which, okay, I mean, you should know what's in your medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You should not know, especially if you might have a certain reaction. But the piece of legislation most relevant to the war on drugs was the Harrison Tax Act of 1914, which restricted the sale of heroin and was quickly used to restrict the sale of cocaine as well. So it's like prohibition. Mm-hmm. I mean, this doesn't say ban, it says restrict. But I mean, the more you restrict and ban things, it doesn't do anything. It's a waste of legislation, waste of time, waste of money, and waste of trying to crack down on it and find people abusing that legislation. So it really doesn't do anything or help anyway, so why did we do it? So in 1937, Reefer Madness, you've heard of that, right? So by 1937, the FBI had cut its teeth on Depression-era gangsters and achieved some level of national prestige. Prohibition had ended. Why? Because it didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And meaningful federal health regulation was about to come about under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act of 1938. The Federal Bureau of Narcotics, opening under the U.S. Treasury Department, had come into existence in 1930 under the leadership of Harry Anslinger. And into this new national enforcement framework came the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, which attempted to tax marijuana into oblivion. Marijuana had not been shown to be dangerous, but the perception that it might be a gateway drug for heroin users and its alleged popularity among Mexican-American immigrants made it an easy target. So wait, let's just reread this for a second. The perception that it might be a gateway drug, that it might. Perception and might. There's no facts. They're trying to get legislation out here to stop the use of marijuana because it might do something bad. It might lead people there. No, it might lead people to the fridge.
Right. It might lead them to the fridge. We're outside to the garden.
And it also was used for racist reasons against Mexican immigrants and stuff like that. And black and poor communities. You'll hear me say a lot, the war on drugs is a war on poor people. So I'll get into that in a little bit. So then in 1954, Eisenhower declares war on drugs. He declares a war, an actual war. He was elected in 1952 by a landslide, based largely on his leadership during World War II. But his administration as much as any other, also defined the parameters of the war on drugs. The Boggs Act of 1951 had already been established, or had already established, mandatory minimum federal sentences for possession of marijuana, cocaine, and opiates in a committee led by Senator Price Daniel called that the federal penalties be increased further, as they were with the Narcotic Control Act of 1956. But it was Eisenhower's establishment of the U.S. Interdepartmental Committee on Narcotics in 1954, it was a mouthful, in which a sitting president first legally called for a war on drugs. And like I've said before, war is not good. Mm-hmm. And so a war on drugs is even worse. And 1971, we have the Public Enemy Number One speech in, who was this? It was Nixon. Nixon had the Public Enemy Number One speech, and he had Elvis there shaking his hand, promoting how bad the abuse of drugs are. And yes, drug abuse is bad. I mean, like with anything, good in moderation. I'm not promoting drug use. I'm not promoting that good for you. But I'm saying, like, if you're going to do it, it's in regulation. It's your responsibility. I mean, something about libertarianism is personal responsibility, something that we hit hard on. You are responsible for your body, your well-being, and your life. And nobody can infringe on what you can and cannot do with your body, property, life. It's up to you. I mean, if you want to sit in your house and be high on heroin all day, I mean, that's your boat. That's not my boat. That's not what makes my day cool.
Really?
And like I've said before, if you're not violently doing anything, you don't get that freedom taken away from you. And all these laws are in place for the possibility that somebody might do something bad. But I'm going to tell you that these laws don't, like I've said, these laws don't do anything to stop it. People that are going to do drugs are going to do them whether or not you say they can. And people that are going to do drugs and do something violent on that drug are going to get that drug illegally and do the violent act anyway. And so you're not stopping anything. Okay, so we have the Public Enemy Number One. In 1982, the Just Say No from Nancy Reagan activism came out. And I mean, that's good to have activism out there telling children just to say no, try not to do drugs, stuff like mm-hmm. that, because it can lead to a bad lifestyle. It depends really how responsible you are, how you use it, stuff like that. And then so there was this whole, in 1986, the black cocaine, white cocaine, I mean, cocaine got turned into like the crack cocaine. It was a cheaper, more like toxic mm-hmm. version that was targeted at like black poor communities, whereas like the powdered cocaine was more towards like more rich,
right,
white, wealthier, upper class. Right. I'm going to tell you, most of our politicians do cocaine. Mm-hmm. And so how hypocritical, right? But then they're out here voting for more crackdowns and drug busts. So then, 2001, the line between legal and illegal drugs, is as narrow as the wording of drug policy legislation. Narcotics are illegal except when they're not, as when they're, processed into prescription drugs, which is also hypocritical. So we can't have narcotics and like opiums and or opioids and stuff like that, but we can if you put it into medicine and prescribe it to us for something, and then get us hooked on it and take us off of it and mm-hmm. tell us we can't go find it anywhere else.
I know.
That's okay though.
Because a drug company,
right, controls and that. So Big Pharma plays a lot into the war on drugs. They have a lot of money at stake to lose, and they always lobby for and throw money into the war on drugs. Let's see here. All right, that's all I wanted to say on that.
Well, I have a fact here that since in the last 40 years, $1 trillion has been spent on the war on drugs. And we have not reached any goal that we set.
No.
For
we haven't
trying to control it coming across the border or whatever. 1 trillion in 40 years and we haven't met one goal.
No.
It seems like we either have to have a new army fighting the war, or we got to just kind of figure ways to, you know, get it under control.
I've said it before, but now I actually have some papers here to talk about it. The CIA and our federal government are responsible for a lot of the drugs that we have here today. So I'm going to go over this with you for a little bit. It's titled The CIA, Contras, Gangs, and Crack. And they actually are responsible for drugs in a lot of other countries, too. Go figure. And then they end up coming over here. So anyway, in August 1996, hey, I was alive then. I was born in May. The San Jose Mercury News initiated an extended series of articles linking the CIA's Contra Army to the crack cocaine epidemic in Los Angeles. Based on a year-long investigation, reporter Gary Webb wrote that during the 1980s, the CIA helped finance its covert war against Nicaragua's leftist government through sales of cut-rate cocaine to the South Central LA drug dealer Ricky Ross. The series unleashed a storm of protest, spearheaded by black radio stations and the Congressional Black Caucus, with demands for official inquiries. The Mercury News' webpage, with supporting documents and updates, received hundreds of thousands of hits a day. While much of the CIA Contra drug story had been revealed years ago in the press and in congressional hearings, the Mercury News series added a crucial missing link. It followed the cocaine trail to Ross and black LA gangs who became street-level distributors of crack, a cheap and powerful form of cocaine. The CIA's drug network, wrote Webb, opened the first pipeline between Colombia's cocaine cartels and the black neighborhoods of Los Angeles, a city now known as the crack capital of the world. Black gangs used their profits to buy automatic weapons, sometimes from one of the CIA-linked drug dealers. So the CIA funds a drug dealer and gives him these drugs to bring into this place. And then it backfires on them completely. And now they have a city that's deemed the capital of crack. And so CIA Director John, Dutch, declared that he found no connection whatsoever between the CIA and cocaine traffickers. Of course, you're the director of the CIA. You're not going to admit.
Oh, yeah, you're not going to find
Don't you. Admit. Don't reveal. Don't say anything. What is that? Admit nothing.
Yeah.
Something. I don't know. I'm not investigated much, so.
I know. I can't remember what it, but don't say, don't tell, so whatever.
And major media and have run long pieces refuting the Mercury News series. They deny that the Bay Area-based Nicaraguan drug dealers Juan and Oscar worked for the CIA or contributed millions in drug profits to the Contras. They also note that neither Ross nor the gangs were the first or sole distributors of crack in L.A. Webb, however, did not claim this. He wrote that a huge influx of cocaine happened to come just at the time that street-level drug dealers were figuring out how to make cocaine affordable by changing it into crack. So he wasn't specifically saying that they brought that it was never here and they brought it. He was saying that it was here, not a lot, and it just so happened at the time that you give these people drugs and fund them to be drug dealers, that all of a sudden it just exploded. Coincidence? Probably not. No. Probably not. So many in the media have also populated that any drug trafficking Contras involved were rogue elements not supported by the CIA. But these denials overlook much of the Mercury News' evidence of CIA complicity. For example, CIA supplied Contra planes and pilots carried cocaine from Central America to U.S. airports and military bases. In 1985, Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, Agent Celerino Castillo reported to his superiors that cocaine was being stored in the CIA's Contra supply warehouse in Ilopango Air Force Base in El Salvador for shipment to the U.S. They were shipping cocaine here. Mm-hmm. And it's proven. It's in the all the reports. And the DEA did nothing about it. So it's okay for the CIA to traffic drugs.
Sure.
It's not okay for people. It's okay for the CIA to deal drugs. It's not okay for people.
Well, you know, people may say, well, I still don't believe it, you know, that it's crazy. But, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, coming back to today's world right now and seeing what the FBI and the CIA had done to Trump, and I mean, the top officials were involved in illegal activities trying to get him not to be elected president. You can see what they do.
They're corrupt. And I mean, it's all corrupt.
I mean...
I don't put any of this past them.
No. No. I don't either. I mean, we're finding out more and more and more because of the pressure by Congress, because they've lied. They went to court with phony documents to get indictments, and now they're investigating. They were supposed to investigate the Russia probe. Now they're investigating like 20 years ago and arresting people and that. I can see them do anything they want to do. Anything. Dealing drugs is probably not even the worst thing that they do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So it is probably 100% plausible that they do this. You can probably make a bet on it.
Yeah, and I have something here. Okay, in 1950 to the early 1970s in Indochina, it says during U.S. military involvement in Indochina, Air America flew opium and heroin throughout the area. Many GIs in Vietnam became addicts. Go figure, because they're addicts, so when they come back, they can get cracked and thrown in jail for being addicts on this drug, and then they don't have to pay their VA bills mm-hmm. and pay them for being in the war that we shouldn't have been in. That's why they got them hooked on drugs, mm-hmm. so they could then make them criminals here. So a laboratory built at CIA headquarters in northern Indochina was used to refine heroin. So these people, they have a laboratory. We're funding it too. We're funding something that that our government can do that they're telling us we can't do. They're refining heroin to make it safer and stronger, more powerful.
Top of the art equipment they're giving them.
Right, right. And after a decade of American military intervention, Southeast Asia had become the source of 70% of the world's illicit opium and major supplier of raw materials for America's booming heroin market. So we gave Indochina everything necessary for them to give us great opium.
Mm-hmm. So, and make hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right. And so what this war on drugs does is it makes good people criminals. Makes good people criminals. There are a lot of people that do drugs that are just, you wouldn't even know. They go about their daily life. They're friendly. They're peaceful. They just, it's something they do in their free time. Who knows why they want to do heroin or something like that. But it's what they do, and they don't infringe or push it on anybody else, and it makes them a criminal. If they get caught with it, they're royally screwed.
No, you're right.
And also there's this lovely thing called asset forfeiture. So let me bring that up here. I actually have it on my computer. So this war on drugs is a war on poor people, keeping people poor. I mean, people do make money from drug dealing. It could be a business. We could be starting businesses that sell safe drugs, so it's not street drugs that could be laced with some kind of toxic poison or something like that. And they target certain demographics, and like I said with marijuana, that was against that was racism against the Mexican immigrants, because it, even the name, it's cannabis, but they gave it a Spanish slang name, marijuana. That's what the Mexicans called it.
Oh, really?
And so that's where it comes from. The real name is cannabis. And I just think it's crazy that it grows out of the earth, has so many medical benefits to it. And basically, we have given our government the power to have a patent on it. Yeah. Only they can do things with it.
Right.
And we can't. And so I'm glad to see states coming forward and making these moves. And hopefully it'll just be allowed, not even just medically, but recreationally everywhere. I mean, medical marijuana, the CBD side of marijuana, doesn't even give you that high of THC. It's all just strictly medical. And it treats so many things like sleeping disorders. It helps eating disorders, PTSD. I said sleeping disorders, arthritis. It's just a huge list of medical benefits. And it's safe. I mean, cannabis oil is safe to give to children that have sleep apnea and stuff like that, or like go through a surgery. Instead of giving them a Percocet, you can give them all natural CBD oil pill, and that's going to help a lot better than the painkiller, and you're not pumping them with opium. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge medical field for it. And then of course, recreational, there's a huge benefit too. I mean, Colorado, the money they made off of recreational marijuana is outrageous.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I know, like, that's one of the largest businesses out there. This one, two guys have a business and they own like so many acres and acres and acres of property. Do you have to be designated by the state to be able to sell that? Or if you grew it yourself, that would be okay?
I think to like sell it, you need licenses to sell it and stuff like that. Okay. Like you would alcohol.
Okay.
I'm not really sure, but I feel like they would treat it like they would selling alcohol. You need a liquor license.
Right. No, I could see that. But what I'm saying is, okay, so that they do that, and that's fine. I find no problem with that. But let's say you wanted to grow it at home. Would you be allowed to do that under the new laws?
If it's recreational, you'd be allowed to grow your own.
Okay, but you couldn't resell it. I understand.
I think, I don't think you'd be able to resell it.
Okay.
Unless you made it into, I don't know how that would work, like making it into like oils and like soaps and stuff like that.
No, but where I was getting like, if they licensed these two guys to sell it and they were making a lot of money from it, and the government to say that, well, no, Shan, you can't grow it yourself for recreational use. That's almost like drug company. you can make it, but you know what I mean? But
yeah,
it would seem logical that if you wanted to grow it for recreational use that anybody could.
Yeah. If it's recreational, I do believe that you can yourself do that, but not resell it.
Right.
I'm not entirely positive that that's true. Something I'll have to look into. Yeah. But maybe I'll figure it out when New York decides to legalize it. If that ever happens, maybe I'll be able to find out.
We'll probably be one of the last.
I don't know. California is legal.
Really?
And they're pretty, aren't they pretty democratic?
Yeah, very. Very democratic.
And then I think like half of them is Republican, right?
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that happen in California that pass, but then again, they have a huge outcry because, like, sanctuary cities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, now like San Francisco used to be a really nice city to go to. And because of the homeless, I had a friend that was just out there, and you get a map now and what areas to stay away from, because the homeless people don't have to use bathrooms anymore. They can go on the street.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah, so they give you zones where to stay out of. And so the city puts up with that. But then again, there's a large group of people that aren't for that. But because they're
And that's why they talk about secession, because they're so...
Yeah. So, but, you know, that's...
But I think Massachusetts recently passed it, right?
I think so,
Massachusetts.
Yes. Probably Vermont.
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I would think Vermont.
I mean, not to be to be stereotypical, but hippies live there.
Yeah, and so. I mean, Vermont is a socialist, basically known as a socialist state because Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, that's where he comes from, right?
Right.
Which I heard he's running 2020 against
Trump.
He
might, if he can remember what year it is, because the guy's in his 80s now, so it's going to be awful hard for him to...
Yeah. I know he's got a huge following, though.
Yeah.
He has very huge following.
But
and
he's a... I don't know. That got burned up. You know, his son is running for office in Vermont.
Is he?
For some office, yeah, and he wouldn't back him. Bernie wouldn't back him. Endorse him because he never endorses anybody.
Oh.
And so he wouldn't endorse his own son for office. <That's> crazy. I don't know. It is crazy.
It's crazy. So asset forfeiture. So this war on drugs, not only do they target poor communities, poor people, and just keep the poor more poor and stop businesses from happening, but they also can take your possessions even without any real evidence. So during a July 9th traffic stop in Meridian, Mississippi, police found $360,000 stashed in a secret compartment in the car. Though that's perhaps an eyebrow-raising amount of money, readers of that linked article might notice something odd. The driver was let go, but the money was kept by the cops. The unnamed individual may or may not get that cash back, but whether they're charged with a crime is not necessarily the point. If you have a suspicious amount of cash, sometimes much less than 360 grand, the cops can seize it, and it's on you to prove the money isn't connected to a crime. This is the intersection of civil law's low burden of proof of for prosecutors and criminal law's aggressive reach. And it's done to fund bad police policies. They can take your cars, they can take your private property, they can take your money, and they just bank on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't even have to prove that it's connected to a crime. They can call it a drug bust and get to take whatever they want.
Right.
And then not find anything. Be like, well, we thought maybe that it... I just closed everything out, but
in most state laws, it says here under the Cato Institute,
Cato.
Yeah. That most state laws are, encourage police to use civil
asset forfeiture
over gathering information, neutral information to prove right or wrong against that person.
Right.
So they want the money and the assets rather than getting proof that you either did or did not do a crime.
And why doesn't this outrage people?
Because Trump has nothing to do with it.
Right.
But no, you're right. I mean, there's so many things people are ignorant about that if they would just take maybe half a day and read up on things.
On everything that's so messed up.
Right. That I think you'd have... a real
movement,
you'd have a little better educated mass of
people.
Americans. Yeah. And I mean, things like this go on and they're encouraged. That's the thing that bothers me. They're encouraged to do this.
They are. So I just remembered, I want to say it before it leaves my head again. The other thing that happened this week, I was coming back from Saranac Lake after the plane ride, and I got stopped by Border Patrol just on the highway. They were doing, so I was coming down 87, coming back down towards Queensbury, and all of a sudden I saw reduced speed signs because it was a 65, and then it was reduced to 55, and then a little bit after that it said they were makeshift signs too, reduced to 45, And then it was like reduced to
87.
It was around, kind of around Paradox.
So that's in.
It's in
our country more.
That's yeah. It's in New York. It's let me pull up a map. Let me pull up a map here. But then it went to 35, and then there was a whole bunch of cones. And it was like, be prepared to stop. And there were lines of cars, and there were so many like immigration patrol cars everywhere, like parked on the median.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a bus that looked like it would transport people. They would probably, if they found somebody, put them in there.
Yeah.
But when I got up to the front, I rolled down my window to see what was going on. Like,
yeah, what's happening?
And they were like, this is immigration patrol or whatever. They said something to do with immigration. And they're like, in what country are you a citizen of? And like, I almost forgot. Because like, it made me think, well, what country am I in right now?
Really,
did I go
like,
the wrong way?
That's what you should
have
said.
Did I go to Canada?
Gee, I think America, but am I going the wrong way? Should I say Canada?
So I said, the United States? Like, can he let me go? But I was so, I kind of felt like I was like in Germany or something they're like searching
like
for
border
people.
Control.
I didn't feel like they would be so far away from Canada trying to find people.
No.
Like I know we're close to Canada. I know Saranac Lake is pretty close to Canada, but I didn't feel like I was that close.
Right.
Let's find up on
But you know, too
here.
Bad you didn't have somebody in a car. Like if I was in the car, I would have said, hola.
I would have been in so much trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would have had my license on me. It would have been fun to.
Yeah, I should have just like Spanish. Pulled it up on like Facebook Live.
Yeah,
just like
should've.
Messed with them. So let's find out here. Saranac Lake, New York. And we'll see how far away it is from the Canadian border. And then I was a good like 50 to 40 miles south of Saranac Lake when this happened. So I'm not, I heard that the policy is that they can do these like random checks within 100 miles of the border.
Really?
That's what I heard. I'm not sure how true it is, but that's what I heard. I just like zoomed out. So I want to find directions. And let's go from Canada border. Let's see how like just this was to Saranac Lake. From the Canadian border to Saranac Lake, it's already 99.6. Oh, that why is it in kilometers? I want it in miles. Oh, I don't know how to do that. How do I switch it to miles? I'm an uneducated, stupid American who can only work with our system of measurement. And I don't know the metric system. That's pretty bad. Let's see here. I'm not really sure why it's doing that. So anyway, let's figure out how to switch to miles. Measure distance.
Okay. Something. Oh, it can't be.
I feel like it's... So I know Saranac Lake might be within that 100-mile radius, but let me find here.
111 miles or 179 kilometers.
Yeah, I got 179 kilometers.
Yeah, that's 111 miles.
111 miles. So even just Saranac Lake is out of that distance. So, I mean, I was a good 40 to 50 miles south. And so they were definitely out of that radius. So I'm not really sure. I wish I, like, took a picture, like, put it on Facebook Live or did something. I was just so confused. I had no idea what was going on. Also, I was confused that there were two lanes that you could go into, and all the cars seemed to be lined up in one lane, and I was in the other lane where nobody was, so I didn't know if I was doing the right thing.
They probably figured you were Canadian.
So, everyone was waiting in this really long line, and I was in the other lane coming down anyway. And so I'm like, well, I'll just stay over here. There's no cars over here. And I got right up to the front. But yeah, that was weird.
Let's probably ask you what country you were from. You know, I mean, here everybody's in one lane and you're driving down the other one.
I wasn't going to wait.
Because what countries are there that drive in the other lane? So they probably figure driving in the wrong lane, you know.
Well, it was on the highway.
Oh, okay.
So it was a two-lane highway on 87.
Here comes a crazy Swedish girl.
Yeah, so that kind of threw off my day. But that was that other thing that I wanted to tell you guys. And I think that's all I have for you guys today. Let's see. What am I doing the rest of the day? What am I doing? Oh, yeah. So I do have a wedding coming up that I'm going to next weekend. So I've been working on a huge, huge project for that. And it's been consuming my every waking moment that I have free.
How long is the wedding? You have
the wedding is in 7 days.
Oh my gosh.
But so like the hardest part, I can't talk about it yet.
I know.
But the hardest part of the project is pretty much done. And I can't wait to tell you guys about it after the wedding, because it's just been something I put so much time and work into, and it's all starting to come together and it's looking great. And I got a little frustrated yesterday with it because I had to like take it apart and do it again. And but it's been good. It's been really good. And can't wait to post pictures and tell you guys all about it. So that's all I have for you guys. Thank you for coming and listening, and I hope you guys have a great day.